garment's life cycle, end of life. How can we improve upon that? I think that's the innovation I'm interested in, and what would be most beneficial for our industry. But yeah, there's so much fast fashion and waste creating this huge burden, and it's not going away until we make a valiant effort for each company to get on board with this, and also convince the mass market, the mass people, to accept that and value that.
Voices with value, stories with soul, tools for transformation. Innovate so you do not stagnate. This is Innovation Insights.
Welcome to another episode of Innovation Insights, where we dive deep into the minds shaping the future of industries through innovation, creativity, and groundbreaking research. We believe that innovation happens in all aspects of life. I am your host, Dr. Yolanda Sanders. Today, we are thrilled to welcome Hillary Glenn Riley, a visionary designer and industry trailblazer whose expertise in knitwear and performance apparel has left a lasting mark on the outdoor and activewear industry. Hillary is currently the senior knit apparel designer at Smart Wool, a VF company, where she leads the charge in developing high-performance, sustainable knitwear that merges function with style. With over a decade of experience in the industry, she has collaborated with leading brands, including Crimson Clover, Title IX, Pearl Izumi, Spider, and many more, shaping the way we think about technical apparel. Beyond her work with Smart Wool, Hillary is also the co-founder of Glenn and Glenn, an apparel brand dedicated to pushing the boundaries of innovation and design. With a Bachelor of Science in Apparel Design and Production from Colorado State University and further studies at the Fashion Institute of Technology, Hillary has honed her craft through diverse experiences spanning trend forecasting in Paris, sweater design in New York, and performance wear development in Colorado. Her ability to merge aesthetic appeal with technical functionality has positioned her as a key innovator. In today's conversation, we will explore her career journey, design philosophy, and how innovation continues to shape the future of performance and lifestyle apparel. Get ready for an inspiring discussion with an industry leader who has mastered the art of combining comfort, sustainability, and style in every stitch. Welcome to the Innovation Insights podcast. I'm so happy to have you here.
Well, I'm happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, you are a blast from my past. My days at Colorado State, you were one of my students there. And it's been just so much fun to watch your career over the years. I think it was, it's been a while since you graduated. I'm not going to.
It has been a while.
I'm not going to. We won't have to say any dates. But it's fun because there is, when you go through a design program, there's a cohort of you go through together, and we still have remained friends. And I see your posts on social media that you're doing things together, your careers, your lives continue to evolve. Yeah. And so it's just been really, really fun.
It's been great. I mean, college was amazing. I think the program at CSU was amazing. You were like my favorite teacher there. So it's so fun to reconnect. And I've stayed close with several of the girls in the design courses that we were in at CSU. And it's been fun seeing where everyone's like trajectory went after school. And some went into sustainability. And then, of course, another best friend that's also in knitwear. Yeah, it's been awesome.
Yeah, I'm going to try to get both of those individuals on here.
I know. Yeah.
Thank you. Well, let's start with what made you decide that you wanted to pursue fashion as a career?
I think growing up, I was always interested in art, and I think my parents knew that or saw my, artistic abilities as a child and kind of pushed me to go into art classes. And so I grew up just doing as many art classes as I could and really had a passion for it. My sister was also very skilled in art. My mom was an interior designer, so she had you know, fantastic taste in clothing and interior design. So I think that also influenced me as well.
Oh, absolutely. So it's in the genes. It's in the genes.
It really is. Yeah. And then I remember in high school, I was interested in fashion journalism after doing like a yearbook class and kind of doing layouts and like fashion magazines. And then I just actually went to a CSU informative meeting to hear about the apparel design program. And that really interests me. And I loved that they helped get you into an internship your senior year. So I was like, oh my gosh, that would be amazing. So I think after learning about some of the apparel design programs, that was like, okay, I want to do that. I want to apply my artistic skills into fashion illustration. And so that kind of sealed the deal for me there.
Yeah, I was fortunate. I think at that time when you were in the program, I was teaching the beginning classes all the way up through the senior level classes. So you had a lot of Yolanda Sanders in your life. But I do remember you just coming in completely passionate, great taste and illustration skills. And I used to use even when I left Colorado, I used your senior line package, your whole presentation. I used it as an example for students too. Yeah. It was good.
God, thank you. I remember that was a lot of work that went into that. And it was fun. Used in my portfolio for a while.
Good. Well, that was the purpose, was that you have something that was portfolio ready when you finished. So what designers really influenced you or were inspirational to you, or brands or artistic movements that inspired you when you were growing up?
Well, it's interesting because I was kind of dead set on going and interning at Ralph Lauren when I was in college. And there was an opportunity, and then it didn't work out time-wise. And an opportunity to intern at Diane von Furstenberg came about. And I knew of her. I didn't know a lot about her. And I actually was like, I have to jump on this opportunity. It was kind of on the rise of her second coming after she was huge in the 70s. And then she became very popular in the early 2000s. So it was pretty, fortunate that I was able to accept that internship, and her style just fit me way more than Ralph Lauren, which would have been great too. But, I like the timeless classics, the like quality materials, the history, but DVF was just like, opened my world to more of like print and color and beautiful drapery. And it was amazing. So I feel very fortunate to have gotten that internship and opened my eyes to Diane von Furstenberg, which is still a favorite designer of mine to this day. Also loved Balenciaga, more of that edgy, structured look. And then, a recent favorite of mine is Iris van Herpen, just like insane, creative genius that she is. Love her designs. And then also Stella McCartney was one of my favorites. That her store was actually across the street from DVF when I was interning, so I'd always go over there and look at her designs. But there are many over the years, but it was interesting after like how things shift as my taste expanded as an adult.
I remember when you got the von Furstenberg internship. I was like, yes, I knew that it wasn't your first choice, but I thought, oh, this is just perfect for her. I don't think I ever told you that, but I was like, oh.
Yeah, it was so great. I mean, just seeing, because I was doing mostly like materials and working with the print team, and then also running up to their like Midtown studio, doing classic intern work, but it was so worth it and met a lot of wonderful people there. And it was just really eye-opening. And I did get to stay on and be like their trim liaison for a little bit, which was really fun as well. So that was awesome.
So what was it like? Because you were from the middle of the country, Colorado, and you're from Nebraska too, aren't you?
Yep, Nebraska originally, yep.
Yeah. And so what was it like to move to New York City? Because sometimes, that's a big transition from a little bit slower paced lifestyle.
I knew, I think in college, that's where I wanted to go. I understood if I wanted to get the full fashion industry experience, I needed to go to New York or LA or Paris or London would have been awesome too. But New York seemed accessible because it was not in a different country. And also I had been to New York, I think once before. I just loved the energy of the city. And yeah, that really inspired me. I was excited about it and excited to leave the Midwest or small town and experience the big city life, which was great.
Well, New York is amazing. It is amazing.
I do miss it a little bit. So
Your career is really impressive. Knitwear design. And you've also taken a unique route because you were a contractor, independent contractor.
Yes.
For many, many, many. First, tell us what drew you to knitwear design, and then we'll talk about you being a contractor.
Yes. Knitwear design was actually kind of by happen chance. I knew nothing about knitwear design, didn't have much experience at our design program at CSU. It was 2008 and I had just finished, or I was looking for a job while I was in New York. Really wanted to stay in high-end design after my internship with DVF, but it was the recession, so jobs were very hard to come by, and I was interviewing a lot. I interviewed for Macy's private label, and they had an assistant sweater design position open. Ended up getting the job, and I remember everyone, my parents were very happy that she got a paying job in the city, and I took it immediately, and that's kind of where I ended up learning everything about knitwear design, specifically sweaters in particular. And as an assistant designer, you're like on the job training a lot. I thought that was, although it wasn't like my dream job of who I wanted to design for, it really taught me so much about working with factories, working with a huge mass market industry like Macy's. We were producing thousands of units for one style, which is a lot and very important. You get things right. I'm really grateful for that opportunity and the people I worked with there who shaped the growth in my knitwear skills and kind of fell in love with, like, there's just endless possibilities within the knitwear realm and so many things you can do. Really unique ways to apply yarns and stitches and create a unique piece. So that's how I got my start in knitwear, which was not where I was thinking I was going to go, but it was just a really great opportunity for me.
Well, I was so excited when I saw you go that route because I love knitwear, and it is tough because a lot of universities don't have strong knitwear programs. There's a few that are starting finally, but it's tough.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I feel lucky to have gotten that and kind of wish I had more experience or had done more knitwear exploration in my younger years. But yeah, that's how I fell into it.
Yeah. And so you've about over 10 years as a contract designer. So what was that like?
Yeah, I also wasn't in the plan for me, but I ended up just opportunity-wise, I spent about 4 years in New York and I loved it. I just wasn't designing what I wanted to be designing at the time and really wanted to push myself into more of the performance wear industry, which at the time I had also heard it was a better life balance, work-life balance, because in New York, you were working 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. at night. It was just crazy. And I missed the outdoors. I missed being active, missed the mountains. So initially I was interviewing in Portland at Adidas and Columbia. And so I was moving out of New York, staying with my sister who lived in Boulder, interviewing on the West Coast. Those jobs I ended up not getting. Then I realized there were all these opportunities in Colorado to just, focus on contract design. And especially with my knitwear background, that kind of helped me with a leg up because there weren't a lot of knitwear contractors in Denver area as well. So I think I was like, okay, I'll just do some contract work while I figure out where I'm going to move. And then I ended up just loving it. I knew I wanted to end up in Colorado again at some point. I was able to find enough work to make that a full-time career and stay close to family, stay in the mountains where I loved. So it was awesome. And then just focus on design work, which was a dream to do, and kind of like not have to be in a million meetings and not have to deal with overseas factories all the time. But yeah, there are definitely like perks and negatives to that as well. But
yeah,
it was great. And it definitely an adventure working with so many different companies, which really rounded out my design experience.
So how do you handle working with multiple brands at one time when you're a freelancer or contract
design? Yeah, that was a struggle. I think you have to be pretty diligent on your time management skills, which like are still not perfect for me now, but I was pulling a lot of all-nighters at times and really just busting my ass for a while and trying. There's a lot of clients that had overlapping deadlines, and that was hard, where you had to deliver, you know, multiple different designs at the same time to different brands. So being able to be agile, switch gears throughout the day, even onto other brands. And I think that's why I did it for so long. It was really interesting for me to design different products and compete. Or it kept my interest. I didn't get bored doing the same thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it was tough. You have to also get out of your comfort zone and look for work. Sell yourself, essentially sell your skill set, which was tough for me, and definitely like why I ended up taking a lot of work, any opportunity that came my way I said yes to. And then it got a little busy, but then you have your clients that come back season after season, and then you get into a groove and get on a schedule with things. So it was an experience. It was a roller coaster of
I bet. So did you do like cold calls out to companies to sell yourself or to get work?
I did. Yeah. Like cold emails. I did. I went to all of the trade shows. I remember just like by myself, I'd show up and go to booths and try and get contacts that way. So I went to SIA, which was in Denver at the time, went to OR in Salt Lake, went to OR in Denver. So yeah, I think having the trade shows close by was nice, but that was actually a way I got a couple clients that way. And then, of course, maintaining your network, reaching out to people like, hey, tell them your experience. You know how to do, you can do a quick flat sketching for them. You can do some trend research for them. Just like trying to take a load off of their workload and also be enjoyable to work with. So I think keeping good relationships was key as well.
Oh, yeah. Comments and advice there. What advice would you give to anyone that would be interested in freelancing or being a contract designer?
What I've told people before is I think working in-house in a company first is really helpful to fully understand the whole process, the whole big idea, how everything works. I think it would be hard to jump into contract design without that knowledge, like understanding the schedule, how things are delivered, how information is delivered to the factories, what the timelines, prototyping. So I often tell people, like, if you get a chance to work in-house, I would recommend doing that before going out on your own, just so you can understand the big picture of the company. I think that helped me, having interacted with overseas factories at my job at Macy's was really helpful to understand like their viewpoint, how to communicate with them, and just understanding like what tech packs need to look like for the factory to understand them was key. So creating a great tech pack for your brand so they have limited changes on their end would be what they're looking for, essentially, too. So less work on the brand side. So yeah, I think mainly working in-house would be my biggest suggestion for people who are starting to think about contract.
I think you're absolutely right, because you need to understand the industry so that you can then be a good partner with whomever you're company you're working with.
For sure.
You're now, you were a contractor at Smart Wool, but now you've transitioned into a position as a senior knitwear designer. So what's exciting about that? And just like, you know, just for our audience, the whole Denver apparel outdoor market, it took a huge shift when VF Corp moved to Denver, and so many opportunities there.
Oh yeah, like that was a game changer. You still have Izumi, Obermeyer and Aspen, Spider and Boulder, Crimson Clover and Boulder. So there's still like several small companies, but VF moving to Denver was huge. North Face is a huge company. And then Smart Wool was in Boulder and then moved to Denver as well. But yeah, that's an awesome. I've seen so many CSU students come through interning. I work with a lot of CSU alumni at Smart Wool. So it's really awesome to see opportunities arise in Denver for that in the performance market. But yeah, I think I contracted for Smart Wool for several years. So that was very helpful when this job position opened up. So they kind of knew my work, my aesthetic, my work habits and interaction. So I think that was helpful in me getting the job. And then I've really loved going back in-house and focusing on one company versus multitasking with other things. And then just being in a stable salary job is great for me. And I have a young family, so that's been good. But yeah, I do miss like contract days where you could just work from the beach or something, or go on vacation to your own timeline. But it's been great. And yeah, VF is just a really awesome opportunity for people in Denver.
Yeah. The Denver market is really an amazing market and lots of just job opportunities in apparel. And I think sometimes people don't realize that. Now, tell us a little bit about Smart Wool, because they're known for performance knitwear. And
I think most people know them for their socks, obviously. A lot of people don't even know that they have active apparel, outerwear, base layers, obviously our franchise category. But yeah, we're trying to change that, trying to get into more doors and grow the business in that, in other categories beyond base layer and on mountain. And yeah, what excites me, I guess, in working in knitwear is there aren't a lot of performance knitwear brands out there. And so it's this untapped market, especially using merino wool, which is like the best fiber you could use for performance knitwear. So that has been an awesome opportunity for me working there, is to push myself and push innovation that way, constantly learning how to better that and improve performance knitwear in an untapped market, essentially.
And so with performance, how does that differ from fashion products, purely fashion products versus performance products? What are some things that you have to consider as a designer?
Material, mainly. You know, fashion products, you can use a lot of different options. And working for Smart Wool, obviously, we want wool incorporated in there somehow. We've developed a lot of materials, woven materials, jerseys, blends. And so that's really cool to do as well. Like, we're not just taking off the shelf fabrics you can get anywhere. We're working on testing those. Lots of testing happens on materials, which is why we work so far ahead. And then same with yarns too. We work with several different yarn blends, yarn plate yarns, to achieve the desired fit and the desired compression that we need. So we're constantly developing and working on that. And so it differs from other companies because we're creating these materials and creating these formulas to create the best product that we can to deliver on the best performance that we can.
So textile science is extremely.
Yeah. And I was like, I wish I paid a little more attention in that class. It was a It's really important.
Yeah, I agree that it's this important. I think across even fashion products, but performance wear, so extremely important. So I'm glad you talked about the materials. How about the human factor? How does that play into performance apparel?
For instance, like body mapping. Yeah, we do a lot of that with knitwear. We're doing more base layer fit or first layer, where we're trying to adapt to the body in motion. And so with knits, you can really engineer anything, which is just amazing. So dependent on what machine you're using. But for instance, seamless, you can engineer mesh zones, creating a seam-free garment and having those breathability maximized in your highest sweat areas. And then you can also add stitches and extra yarns to add durability in zones that need it, like your elbows or your knees when you're doing activities like skiing or backpacking on your shoulders. So there's just unlimited ways where you can use stitches and yarns to maximize those performance benefits, like breathability, temperature regulating, odor regulating. So it's pretty amazing what you can do.
Yeah. And you're using whole garment knit technology?
We're hoping to. It's like on the pipeline.
Yeah.
We do currently use seamless and then Shima machines, stole machines for flat knit. But yeah, and that was really interesting to me too. I had not worked on seamless before smart wool. So it's been a good learning experience for me and getting to see how those machines create the tubes. And it's fascinating.
Yeah, it is. It really is. And as you said, to be able to tailor a garment in different spots or areas to meet functionality needs for humans. Do you do a lot of wear testing and with people or fit models?
Yes, we have a whole wear testing team. So a lot of work goes into that before a product gets to market. And I think that's just a testament to our company values. We're not going to put something out there that gets a hole in it first day on the mountain or something. Like, we test literally everything, which is tough because if it doesn't pass, then you gotta keep working on it and then push it off to the next season. So yeah, we're making sure everything is great before it gets to the consumer.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with high standards at all.
Yes, true.
Which is great. Another thing I was going to ask you about the design process, are you working with 3D technologies for like 3D modeling of your patterns and things like that? Because we've had some guests and partners that are talking about.
We do have a dedicated 3D designer on our team, and we use it a lot for various things. We've used it for design presentations to give an accurate representation of a garment before it's made. We've used it in lieu of a physical prototype, which saves so much time. And so that's mainly like how we use it, is visuals on our website as well. And I think that's the future of it, to utilize it more and decrease time spent shipping and waiting and creating a P1. Like, we can do it virtually first, and that's like significantly cut down on time and effort, and such a great tool for the fashion industry using programs like Clo and Browseware. And yeah, it's essential. I think it's really the direction the fashion industry is using it. It's going to be pretty helpful go forward.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. That is great. And so let's take a little bit of a turn, because you are very entrepreneurial too. And you co-founded Glen & Glen in 2019. And what I respect too is that you took a couple of years of developing the company before you launched it. And so tell us about Glen & Glen.
Well, yeah, it was during my time when I was contracting for several other companies. And I was sharing an office with my sister in Boulder, and She's also a designer in her own right. She works for, did a lot of brand identity for companies, is an amazing graphic designer, photographer. So she kind of had that marketing side of things. I had the apparel design skill set, and we just, I guess as kids, we always, or not as kids, like young adults, we thought how cool it would be to run a company together or create something. We're both into fashion. So the timing was just kind of right where we were both contracting and had some flexibility to start this plan and create a business plan. My dad was a huge help because he had recently retired and was our CFO for a while. So he got the financial stuff organized, which was key because that was not my skill set at all. And so it was truly a family business where we pitched to investors. I had initial, we had a 9-piece collection, I think, mapped out to launch for spring. And we were working with developers to get the patterns made. I think the hugest struggle was finding a factory. As a contractor, you don't have a ton of connections. I had a few from Macy's. So I think that was very time consuming, and maybe I'm getting off topic. There's so many things I did not know about.
This is good.
But yeah, I think creating that business plan, creating a set amount of designs that we wanted to launch with that displayed our vision, which was we wanted to fill this spot of in the women's apparel world of like modern workwear meets evening attire, without the price tag of like higher end contemporary brands, which is what I wanted to wear, but I couldn't afford to wear. And so we had a very aligned vision of making timeless pieces using quality materials. So like cupro and silk and wool, we had expensive taste, but wanted to make them a little bit more accessible going direct to market without the wholesale, which could help our retail price, but that was tough. So we had to narrow down to just a few 9 styles, and then getting them made took a long time figuring out who was going to produce them. Luckily, we got introduced to an agent in New York who had worked with small brands and worked with smaller companies. So she ended up hooking us up with 2 women-run factories in the garment district in New York that were both fabulous. And it was just a really great time back and forth to New York working with her. Without our agent, I don't think we could have done it. Like we had, it was so overwhelming to find the right factory and also like it pointed in the right direction of textile mills that would work for our line. So that was extremely helpful. But yeah, it was just such a journey, and we learned so, so much. But yeah, unfortunately, we launched in 2019, and right on the rise of us getting our name out there, then COVID happened and shut just everything down. So timing was not on our side with that, but not to say we can't pick it back up again and expand on what we've learned so far. We created some really great pieces and made so many connections that it was worth it. A lot of work, learned so much. And then, yeah, we were able to pivot after what we learned from our first launch, like what styles we thought were going to be successful weren't, what styles were successful. So we took that into consideration when doing our fall line and created a few different pieces that ended up being bestsellers. So it was great to see the business side of things. I think we underestimated the amount of marketing dollars that you have to spend, especially as a small brand, which is sad because a lot of small brands don't have that money, but you really have to compete to get your name out there. And that takes a lot of marketing dollars, which is unfortunate. So I think there's a lot to learn there. And like I said to you, I was like, we could dedicate a whole another hour to
I would love to have your sister and you back to talk more about Glenn and Glimp. The designs were beautiful. The quality, I did purchase a couple pieces.
Yes, thank you.
Beautiful, beautiful. And you were filling a gap And timing wasn't on your side because then workwear went to be sweatsuits.
I know. Exactly. Literally, like 2 years of people, nobody buying any nice clothes. And I was like,
I know. I would love to have you back. And I can imagine in the future that you will, you know, the two of you will get back to that because it was really beautiful. And it's hard. It is hard as professionals to find, and it's going to continue to be harder. So there's that gap that you were filling, I feel is going to become like a huge canyon.
Yeah.
In the next few years.
Right? Yeah. No, you're right. Thank you.
Well, I always say keep all of those designs and ideas that you have, because down the road, the way retail is going now and we're getting smaller and there's going to be less choices for people, and people are going to want choices.
Exactly. So, I'll keep my ideas. Yes, for sure.
I'm sure you have plenty of them that are always. What are some of the biggest shifts that you have seen in apparel design and fashion design over the last decade as you've navigated your career too?
I think one we touched on was 3D, really. Not something that was not on the horizon when we were in school. That was not around. So I've seen that grow quite a bit in the last couple of years and really revolutionizing its efficiency. Like, we're getting more efficient with our time and skill set, and really it's going to be huge. And then AI is definitely playing its own role in the fashion industry as well. There's programs called Newark, for instance, where you can take a hand sketch, and it can pop out this like 3D visual of the garment with some prompts and whatnot. It's not perfect, but I'm like, that's amazing. And that can be used as a visual or for factories and whatnot, but a good reference point prior to making your first proto, just to seeing if you like where your design lines are. So I think that's going to be huge. I think, those two things are really making it their way in the fashion industry.
Yeah, AI is just...
It's crazy.
It is. And being a small business owner, too, with Innovation Insights, I am... You know, every day there's something new that's happening. AI, it's either happening to the platforms that's affecting my workflow. I'm also trying to learn to build AI agents to help do background work for me. This whole company has been built with AI, and it's the only way I'm able to do it.
I know. Yeah, I think we can't fight it as designers. We need to use it in ways that help us, or gathering data or reading reviews on products online and summarizing that. There's ways that can help us and ways that we don't have to let it infringe upon our creative vision, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And one use case I'm using, so for mock-ups for logos, because I have some clients that I'm working with that we're developing logos for them. I can do some quick mock-ups. They're definitely not usable.
Yeah.
Because they're a little bit of a hot mess, but at least I can get an idea like, oh, do you like this style? How's this feel?
Right.
And then recreate it in a higher resolution, cleaner format. But
like ways to quickly ideate on ideas, I think is time saving, efficient, you know.
How do you stay inspired in thinking about innovation and this constantly changing? How do you continue to innovate yourself? And what do you do personally that?
I think I still think there's a lot of knit innovation that I don't know of yet because it's constantly evolving. And I think staying up to date on webinars and like educational classes, and they do in-person classes at Stoll or Santoni. And obviously when you get a chance to visit a factory overseas, that's an invaluable experience. Seeing it up close in real time, how things are being made. I think that's always innovative to me because there's just so much knowledge out there that I haven't gotten or tapped into yet. I think just learning constantly And then, yeah, always checking what's out in the market, always keeping your eyes open to new innovative brands, and yeah, keeping a fresh eye on what's changing in the world and trends.
Yeah, yeah. I love that. One of our 6 values at Innovation Insights is continuous learning, because you just have to keep learning. So any advice for any kind of new textile or new designers? There might be textile designers or apparel or fashion designers, but any advice to them that might be, want to go into knitwear design?
Biggest one would be intern as much as possible. I feel like I regret that in my past. I wish I would have done a few more internships. Luckily, I got an awesome one in New York, but even ones locally, there's a lot of local opportunity here in Denver, or check out where you live, obviously. I'd say nobody's going to say no to like free work also, or maybe people are paid nowadays.
They are more, I know, back in the day, yeah, I did the unpaid internship too. And
yeah, I think maybe there's more, people are getting paid more now, but I'd say take advantage of internships, working in-house, like I said, learning from your team, learning from on the job, everyday activities. And then, yeah, taking advantage. There are some knit classes online. Hard to find. I feel like that's, you need to know where to look. But again, looking at machine vendors have educational classes on their site. Stole Flat Knitting, Santoni Circular Knitting, Shima. There's, yeah, classes you can take, and then take advantage of free webinars or videos online to just understand how things are made in knitwear. Yeah, that'd be the easiest accessible things you could do, I guess.
Yeah, that's great. And as mentioned, accessibility, there's so many resources out there now. And yeah, and also when you were in school, it wasn't that people did one internship. That's what it was. But you know, that was the trend. But
yeah, that was the trend. And yeah, I was like, I wish I did one my junior year, like even done one locally or something. But
yeah, but that just wasn't the trend then.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think that opened my eyes when I was in New York. I had a lot of other friends interning out there, and they were like hopping, do 3 months internship here, do a 3 month internship at Marc Jacobs. And I was like, I should have done
that. Yeah. Well, I think the East Coast schools are doing that more, because yeah. I remember I was interviewing when I was graduating, and there was people that I was interviewing with. We all were flown into a large company's headquarters to interview. There was probably about 50 of us that were flown in to interview for, it was a big company at that time. And the people from RISD, Rhode Island School of Design, they were all like, yeah, they were saying the same thing. I did 3 months here, 3 months there. Right. And I was like, oh my God, I'm just trying to get one.
I know, obviously location plays a huge part in that. Like East Coast people were really lucky to have that many opportunities close by to do it while they were in school.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah.
Yeah. For me, I was like, I could not make money while living in New York. I was like, I have to get a job after this. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Make it work when you're studying or when you have a flexible schedule. Or just you could do one day a week or something.
Yeah. Well, and now too, there's, you know, you could do it virtually. There's so many virtual opportunities. It's not the same as being in-house or on location, but there's still things you could learn that way too. So so do you have any exciting projects coming up or anything that you can share that
I think Smart will work kind of 2 years ahead of time, so we'll see in 2 years. And as far as Glen & Glen, I think future, I would love to do a private label like that again, and use what we've learned to hone in on. Maybe we do smaller batch production, smaller capsule collections. There's a lot of ways you can make things. Like we use some sewers in Wyoming and Colorado. Like it doesn't have to be in New York. I mean, that's where a lot of the skill is out there. But yeah, I think that is a goal of mine eventually, to somehow do that and, yeah, just grow in my career and grow as a manager. And, you know, I think it's fun. The fashion industry is so great. And I think there's just more and more opportunity now than there used to be, especially in all the different facets of the development side of things or the 3D side of things and design and merchandising. There's just so many ways you can go with that.
Yeah. It is a great industry. It really is. Exciting, hard, a lot of work, a lot of work.
Yeah.
I think sometimes people think, oh, it's just fashion and it's glamorous, but oh my God, it's a lot of work.
I know. Yeah, very stressful. And I'm like, I'm not a doctor or anything. This shouldn't be that stressful, but it is stressful.
It is. We asked every guest to define innovation. So I would love to get your definition of that.
Okay. Yes. I think it has shifted. Like I would have probably given a different answer a couple of years ago, but I think innovation to me would be, how do we evolve or improve ways we can reduce waste and overproduction in the apparel market? This is like glaringly the largest problem in the industry. And I just, now working for a more sustainable company, values have shifted more to that. And you see all these documentaries where there's all this waste and just showing up in South Africa and it's very sad to see. And then even me going to like the malls, I'm like, oh my gosh, there's just so much product and too much product out there. And I just think, how can we make lasting products with quality materials that don't harm the environment, that don't create all this excess waste? So innovation for me would be more like biodegradable materials, or what happens garments life cycle, end of life. How can we improve upon that? I think that's the innovation I'm interested in, and what would be most beneficial for our industry. But yeah, there's so much fast fashion and waste creating this huge burden, and it's not going away until we make a valiant effort for each company to get on board with this and also convince the mass market, the mass people, to accept that and value that. And I know price is a huge factor in that. Quality materials are sometimes more expensive, but then you can buy less apparel. It's going to last for years versus like you buying a new top every season or every 6 months. I don't know. It's a challenge on how to convince the population to get on board with that. And how do we make it accessible for people? And yeah, so I think that's where innovation is, in my opinion.
That's a great definition. And I so agree with you. And you did such a lovely job of just wrapping up so many of the challenges of the fashion industry and the apparel industry, but with some ideas on how to make some solutions to be by being innovative. So thank you for that.
Yes, of course. Yeah. I would have probably said something different, but now I'm just like, oh, this is just, it's tough when you see what you see in the apparel industry. Oh, we just want to make better products that last longer, that don't impact the environment, but are accessible. So it is a work in progress.
Yeah, those are absolutely key components. Oh, I'm just so thankful to have you here. Thank you for being here and taking time out of your very busy schedule.
Well, thank you for having me.
So if someone wants to get a hold of you, what's the best way to get in contact with you?
Okay, probably via email. And you could do HillaryGlennDesign@gmail.com.
Okay, great. And you're on LinkedIn too.
I'm on LinkedIn as well.
Yeah, so we'll make sure that that's put into the show notes too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I hope that all of you were as inspired as I have been with this conversation with Hillary Glenn Riley. She has an amazing career in the fashion industry. and has spanned various product categories and various work type situations. So much to learn from her. So please make sure that you follow Hillary, connect with her on LinkedIn. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe, leave a comment, and share it with your network. Your support helps us to continue to bring powerful conversations like this one to the forefront. And thank you for tuning in. And as always, keep innovating, keep dreaming, and keep making a difference.